mean, I was shocked when it happened because I had totally lost hope for Canada, to be honest. But and I found it so inspiring and awesome.
Hey everybody, this is Michelle Evans, Texans for Vaccine Choice, and today I have the privilege of interviewing Megan Murphy. She's a Canadian writer living in Mexico, the founder of Feminist Current, and she hosts the Same Drugs podcast. We're going to kind of talk a little bit about what it was like to be in Canada at the beginning and sort of the height of the COVID pandemic. So, hi Megan, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we connected on some different issues, but I started listening to your podcast and you had BJ from the Canadian Convoy, the Freedom Convoy,
right
on. Yeah, which
BJ
I thought was
Dykter.
Yes, very, yeah, very cool. I was really kind of sad to see that movement peter out here in America. It was like a huge moment in Canada, but didn't really pick up any traction here.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I was shocked when it happened because I had totally lost hope for Canada, to be honest. But, and I found it so inspiring and awesome. And they're still going. Like when I was back in BC a couple months ago, I connected with a bunch of the freedom people. This is sort of how they refer to themselves, like,
yeah,
know, the freedom movement, over in BC, which is where I'm from. And they're awesome. And they're like super organized and, you know, connected across the country and, you know, good at working with other people, which is like, you know, I work alone for a reason. So anyway, it was like, I just, it made me feel a lot better about the situation in Canada in any case.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about your experience in Canada in 2020 and 2021. You left Canada in 2021, correct?
I left Canada in, yeah, the very beginning of 2021. So it would have been January of,
okay,
almost 3 years ago now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I know that there are a lot of different factors that played into that decision, but I'm curious what it was like in, you know, that in the other part of America, North America, during COVID, like the height of the restrictions and the panic and everything. What was your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I left Canada because of what Justin Trudeau's government was doing. Sorry, my nose is itchy. I keep touching my nose. because of what he was doing in Canada with regard to the COVID-related mandates and restrictions, the lockdowns, what was coming down the pike, which, you know, I left just before he implemented the vaccine mandates and just before they shut the borders and just before they implemented their digital passport kind of thing, which, you know, mm-hmm, you were supposed to submit all of your medical information, your vaccine information before you cross the border. Even if you're a Canadian citizen, you know, if you go to the States, if you can manage to get into the States to come back into your own country, you're supposed to submit all your freaking health information. There was other stuff too, you know, with regard to his crackdowns on free speech and his online so-called hate speech bills and so on and so forth. But mostly I was freaked out about the COVID stuff. And I frankly couldn't handle and didn't want to handle living under lockdown anymore. I've never had so much anxiety or depression in my life. I'm not an anxious or depressed person. I just don't struggle with those things. And I was doing everything right, you know, like,
right,
I was like working out at home. I was like going out for walks when I could. I was, well, you know, I tried a couple of these Zoom cocktail hours and then was like, this is awful. I would rather be alone with my dog than having a Zoom. Like, I don't want to do anything on Zoom. Like, I do work stuff.
Yeah.
Like we're doing here. But no, that's not how I want to socialize. Right.
Right.
And just the lack of human interaction and physical touch and fun and being able to, you know, exercise, just being around, like just talking to like a barista, which, you know, all of that was so squashed even in the few things that we were allowed to do because of the masks. Like that's not real interaction. That's not real right. connection when you're not seeing somebody else's face. This is just not how humans are meant to operate. But yeah, so I left. I didn't plan to leave forever. I was kind of going to see how things go. So I left for Mexico, in January, and I had booked a Airbnb for 5 weeks, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll stay a little bit longer than that, see what happens. But as soon as I left, everything got exponentially worse. So while I was here, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks in, you know, they were already starting to cancel a lot of flights. So when that started happening, I was like, oh, I am really getting the hell out of here. and then they, you know, practically canceled all the flights and closed the borders and started making it next to impossible to travel and started implementing the vaccine mandates. And I just stayed and I didn't go back to Canada again for 6 months.
But you have friends and family still there, right?
Yeah, all of my friends. Well, I mean, obviously I've made friends here, but you know, all of my family, I'm not friendless over here. But all of my family is still back in BC. They're over on the island. And yeah, tons of friends. You know, obviously I miss some of my old close friends, but a lot of people I feel kind of fell away for various reasons, you know, as I'm sure you can imagine, sort of connected to the political thing. And that's not because I cut people off for political reasons. It's because progressives cut people off for political reasons or just act, you know, really condescending and judgmental and make you feel like, or try to make you feel, didn't work on me, like you're stupid or a conspiracy theorist. Or crazy. And I don't want to be around people who make me feel bad about myself or act like I should be grateful that they'll even be friends with me, considering I'm a so-called anti-vaxxer and transphobe and all of these other things.
So, I mean, Canada has a reputation of being sort of pacifist in many ways. So I'm curious, was there like this overarching feeling, at least in your area, that if we comply, it'll get better, or like it'll change. It's just not going to get worse. Or was the writing on the wall and people just really had no other options?
I think that most people that I knew at the time, not now, I've gotten to know a lot of different people since. I think that they believed that if they followed the rules, then everything would be fixed, you know, like if we just lock down, then they'll set us free. If we all get the vaccine, then COVID will go away and then we'll all be free again and we can go back to normal. We just all need to do this together so that we can all go back to normal. You know, and people were, as you witnessed as well, as many of us did, people were getting really, there was a lot of vitriol around those who were just questioning, never mind actively pushing back. You know, when the vaccines were first introduced, I've never honestly thought about vaccines before in my life. You know, when I was a kid and a teenager, obviously I got all the vaccines that were given to me at school. And after that, I never bothered getting the flu shot. I think I got it one time or something like that. Cause it was like, my doctor was like, do you want it? I was like, oh, okay, sure. And then after that, I was like, why did I even do, like, I'm not worried about the flu. Like, I'm not old. I'm not a baby. I'm not sickly. But I never, you know, I didn't pay attention to those who were looking more closely at harms or impacts of the vaccines. So I really just, at first anyway, was like, I don't know what this is. So I don't want to take something when I don't know what it is and when there's no long-term research. I don't like being bullied or forced into doing things. So like, I'm inherently going to be averse to going along with something when somebody tells me I have to, and to not question it, you know. And I think everybody should have that response. I think
the critical thinking.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, why do I have to? Why are you bullying me into this? You know, why are you threatening to take away my rights or to criminalize me if I don't do this? Why? And then, of course, it started to become more clear to me. There was there were so many people who were quicker on the uptake than I was.
Okay.
Early on, when we locked down, I believed 2 weeks to stop the spread.
Right.
And then it kept going, and I was like, okay, just a little bit longer. Everybody stop whining, whatever. And then, you know, as it continued and as I started to talk to people who were skeptical of what was happening or saw the writing on the wall, my eyes were opened, and then I could never close them again. But yeah, with the vaccine, I mean, it became clear very early on that it wasn't going to stop the spread. And that we all knew who was most at risk in terms of, like, really harsh consequences for COVID. You know, again, very old people, sickly people, people with comorbidities. And I didn't have any of those things. So I knew that I didn't need any vaccine. And certainly I just didn't want to take the risk. And when I did finally come back to Vancouver after I had been in Mexico for 6 months and I had to go back just to really deal with everything that I had abandoned there, like my apartment and my truck and so on and so forth, I had just left everything there thinking I was going to come back. All anybody could talk about, all of my friends could talk about, was the vaccine. And which vaccine are you going to get, and where are you going to go to get the vaccine? And I was like, this is awkward. The most boring conversation I've ever, is this all you guys talk about? Like, this is hell. I was miserable. And we all had to hang out in a park. Nobody would hang out indoors. People wouldn't, you know, come over to my apartment. We couldn't go anywhere. It's like, I am an adult. Mm-hmm. I don't need to go hang around in a park so that we don't give each other a cold that none of us have.
Right. And you had, I'm guessing at the time that you were still in Canada, you already had built a platform. You had a following with your blog. You had Twitter, and then you didn't have Twitter anymore. But were you using your platform to talk about COVID restrictions or criticize, you know, the government response?
Yeah, I was. Okay. And I was punished for that. I'm completely shadow banned on Facebook now. No one can see anything I post there. That's been going on for a couple of years now. I've been taken out of the algorithm on YouTube. The only video I've ever had taken down, almost everything I post there gets demonetized immediately without any consideration for what it is. But one of the only videos I've had taken down there was an interview that, what, you know, it was barely even, it wasn't even critical of the vaccines themselves. They were questioning of the mandates. And, you know, it was just so milquetoast as far as what you could actually say about the mandates and the vaccines. And YouTube took it down. And so, I'm out of the algorithm there, demonetized. I started doing interviews about the COVID lockdowns pretty early on, I think. And that, again, that's sort of what helped me understand what was really going on and what the dangers were. I think one of the first people who brought it up was Toby Young from the Free Speech Union, who called himself a COVID skeptic. And I was like, oh, And, you know, what he said made sense and was compelling. And so I explored more, which, you know, is what any thinking person would do, you'd think.
Well, and I know now, I think you and I talked about it last time we saw each other in person, but the dissemination of news has been restricted in Canada at this point. So were they even allowing any of this information to bleed through, to get to people either on social media or on, would you have state news, CBC, right?
Yeah, the CBC is our largest by far news platform in Canada. That's our public broadcaster, so government funded. Mm-hmm. And people in Canada, I could tell, I mean, I wasn't, I stopped really respecting or paying much attention to the CBC probably about 5 years ago or so, because of their massive biases. Yeah. But you know, most of my friends there are progressive people and they still trust the CBC, they trust the government, and they're just mainlining that information. And, you know, and it's gotten so much worse since I left and since even during COVID, because the government has taken so much more control over what Canadians can see online. For me personally, you know, that again, that was another reason that I left Canada, is because I was worried that I wouldn't be able to work. So I moved to Mexico and started operating. I also have American citizenship. I have dual citizenship. So I sort of started moving my life and work over to America, in terms of like financials and other things, because I was like, I'm not going to be dependent on Canada for anything because I'm too vulnerable. Almost everything, almost all of my work that I have been doing over the past more than a few years, but you know, particularly during COVID, was critical of the government and government policies, and Justin Trudeau. And that's a good way to get yourself demonetized. And you know, as you know, we heard what happened to just people who were supporting the truckers, like people who donated to the truckers, their bank accounts were frozen.
Did you have any experience similar to that, or were you already like transitioned over?
I had moved most of my stuff over to the US, and I was really glad that I had. But of course, you know, like I was worried that, you know, my PayPal would get shut down. You know, we're so vulnerable now because we're so dependent on the digital.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things out of the many, many, many things that I love in Mexico is that, you know, we're still using cash. You know, people here would far rather you pay with pesos, and a lot of places still don't even take debit cards or credit cards, whereas it's the full opposite in Canada and probably in the US too, where, you know, there's places in Canada, lots of places in Canada that refuse to even take cash, which I think should be illegal, really. Because, you know, first of all, like a credit card is not accessible to everybody. Even a bank account is not accessible to everybody. But if you can just cut that off, you know, they're trying to force people to move over to Apple Pay and I'm sure all sorts of other means of doing all of your financials and payments digitally. And if you do the government wrong, again, that makes you super vulnerable. And I don't feel safe in that country anymore. And it's funny because people, Canadians, progressive Canadians, feminists, will sort of try to mock me or act like I'm insane, like, oh, you think Mexico's safer than Canada? And it's like, okay, I mean, sure, but that depends on what you mean by safe. Like, there's risks that come along with freedom. So you feel safe, but you don't have freedom. You're at risk in a way I don't want to be at risk. Yes, there's other serious risks in Mexico as well. You have to be careful for sure. But it's just, you know, in as far as being able to operate autonomously, I do feel a lot safer here, ironically. Yeah. And Canada should take a long, hard, critical look at themselves if that's how Canadians are feeling.
And do you feel like there is now sort of a sea change with the people that you're still tapped into or groups that you're still tapped into in Canada? I know that there's some political campaigns happening right now where people are, I think you tweeted about it today, about a provincial candidate who was being criticized for questioning masks and vaccines and kind of, you know, being labeled a Trumper essentially.
Yeah, so the conservatives are actually looking good, which is new, because even the conservatives in Canada have been pretty progressive. I stopped voting in federal elections maybe 8 years ago or something like that. I've never voted for Justin Trudeau. There was no party that I felt I could support. There in a couple of municipal or provincial elections, I voted for some independent candidates. I voted for the People's Party of Canada once. But there's never been any actually mainstream party. And that was this past year that I voted for the People's Party of Canada candidate that I felt could represent any of my interests. So that's the, you know, you can choose between the NDP, our far left party, the Liberals, who are sort of center, maybe a little bit left of center, and the Conservatives, who are supposedly our right-wing party, but they're hardly right-wing. But now with Pierre Poilievre, he has been really the only mainstream candidate that has been openly pushing back against the COVID mandates and pushing back against restrictions on free speech and free expression and standing up for the constitutional rights of Canadians. And the BC Conservatives have really come out and started pushing back against SOGI, which is the sexual orientation and gender identity program that they've implemented in schools across BC and Alberta. And they, of course, have similar programs in other provinces as well. So it is really hopeful. The BC conservatives have been fairly irrelevant in most BC elections. BC is a really progressive province, so it's usually NDP liberal. But there's people who are just desperate for anybody to say something about this stuff, and no one has. So it's not, you know, I'm not right wing, I'm not conservative, I'm not anything, but I'm not going to vote for a party that's willing to take away my rights and freedoms, restrict my constitutional rights, who pretend not to know what a woman is. So if there's any candidate who's going to stand against all that, then I will support them, knowing that, of course, you know, these are politicians and politics and nobody's going to be perfect, and you should never trust the government either way.
Yeah. Well, and if there is some sort of, for lack of a better term, like a red wave in Canada in this election cycle, is there any chance that you would return home, or you're rooted where you are now and you enjoy the freedom enough to not?
I mean, I like Mexico better than Canada for a lot of other reasons as well. I think I would spend a lot more time in Canada. I do want to spend more time with my family. And you know, and like I said, I really appreciated connecting with the freedom people over there. They're really interested in fighting and taking action on a number of issues that I'm invested in. So I mean, never say never. I don't think that I would ever go back to living full time in Canada. I don't like the political climate. I don't like how joyless it is there and how disinterested people are in having fun. I mean, it's true. Like there's like major, there's a cultural kind of no fun vibe. That, well, I guess that in Canada, people like to keep to themselves and they just want their I mean, this is how we got here in so many ways, is people are like, I've got all my stuff, my groceries are being delivered to my house, I've got my Amazon deliveries, you know, I don't have to do anything, I don't have to go anywhere, all of my entertainment is right here on my laptop or my phone. And I think a lot of people have just forgotten about how to be human or become forgotten about why it's important to be human because they haven't had to be and everything's been made so convenient for them.
And they haven't been allowed to be human and have a human interaction, which I think that my assumption would be that people would be hungry for that. But it seems like just culturally, there's a barrier.
I think, you know, there's a lot of people that were, and there's a lot of people who during COVID learned that they liked that better, you know, and were like, cool, I'll just stay home then. All my stuff's here, which to me was hell, you know, like I really could not relate to that. And that was really shocking to me to discover how many people really don't care about freedom, not only their own freedom, but about the freedom of other people. And those, of course, are the people who called us selfish.
Right.
They're fighting for freedom as though it was just about me. Like, it's like, yeah, I'm unhappy, but also I was fine. Like, I didn't lose my business. I didn't lose my job. I didn't I didn't lose anything. Like, I'm a healthy, mentally healthy person. I wasn't, you know, a drug addict. I wasn't somebody struggling with mental health issues who I can only imagine the hell that you would be going through if that was the case during COVID and you had no resources and couldn't even engage with any other people and get supports that way.
So that begs the question, since you have dual citizenship, when are you moving to Texas?
I mean, I love Texas.
You've seen that many times, how much they embrace you with their huge crowds.
Yeah.
I
try to come back as much as I can. I spent a lot of time in Texas and in the States in general over the summer and spring. And so I hope to have any excuse to come back to Texas. I'm hoping to like hang tight here through the winter because it's obviously the best season. But I, you know, like if I wasn't living here in Mexico, I would consider Texas, primarily. I mean, I can't really think of any other state I have friends and people that I know there. I love the vibe and I love the freedom loving culture, the like we're keeping our guns and our rights and our property. And I've embraced the like American flag and the American way so much. It's so great to be around people who are, you know, like, I think it's simple in a lot of ways. It's just like, let me live my life, stay out of my life. Like all these people who are really such actually self-centered, self-absorbed people who don't know what's happening in the rest of the world, who don't interact with anyone different than them, who are not getting out into the world and having conversations with other people about their lives and their experiences and what they want. These are the people who are also trying to control everyone else's life.
And it's the contradiction you'd mentioned, like, you know, are they really safe if they're not free? But if they're saying that they're so safe, yet they're living every day in fear of, you know, this unknown or, you know, being arrested or what have you, whatever fear they have that's connected to their, like, I guess, their brainwashing, for lack of a better term. Like, I don't know. I would rather be free and fearless than live every day thinking like it's going to be my last because somebody sneezed at the coffee shop next to me. Like, it just seems really miserable.
It's not life. And I mean, there is risk in life. It's just true. You can't control everything. And of course, nobody wants to die. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. I don't want to die. You know, I care a lot about my health and feeling good and living. But to me, living means living, and that comes with risks. You know, if I go out to the bar, I might catch a cold, you know, like if I, you know, get out on the highway, I might get in a car accident. It's just, you know, if I eat this food, I might get sick. It's just the idea. These people think that they can control everything. Again, not just about themselves, but about other people. Like, you can control what your neighbor is doing and pretend that that's somehow about you and somehow mm-hmm. about protecting others or helping others. I mean, there's all sorts of other ways that we could, you know, people who think that they can control the climate somehow. It's like, you can't.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, how do you think like that sort of perspective ties in? Because, and this is sort of a tangent that I didn't really plan for, but the MAID program there in Canada, where it's like you can basically sign yourself up for euthanasia for a variety of reasons. Some of them are just kind of normal, like you're feeling a little depressed or you have substance abuse issues or something like that. You can be approved for self-assisted for assisted suicide.
Yeah, what they've started moving towards with the medically assisted suicide program in Canada is to allow people with mental health issues and substance abuse issues to be able to apply. Mm. And the whole thing is just so awful and yeah. gross. I mean, if, you know, these people are generally the people who are applying for MAID are people who are struggling a lot in a variety of ways, but also people who are poor. Mm. And one wonders or one can imagine how much their lives and outlook and hope for the future would improve if they had the supports they needed and had more relationships and more, again, you know, like in-person connections, you know, could participate in the world and have hobbies and have a life instead of being abandoned at home alone with barely enough to buy groceries, and on top of that, health problems / mental health problems / maybe substance abuse problems. And it
doesn't
really
feel
inhumane.
Coincidental.
Well, and it's so much easier for the government, obviously. You know what's
right.
so much more costly is to provide really good health care, mental health support, in-person support, rehab. These things are really, really expensive, and it's a lot cheaper to just let someone die.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, at the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned.
And they created so much of this through their own restrictions and lockdowns and vaccine mandates and cutting people off from human interaction or closing businesses. I mean, it's all kind of, to me, it doesn't seem like it happened by chance that this program came along to solve all the problems that they created through their COVID response.
Well, and yeah, and we can see the amount of people who died or, you know, through overdose or through committing suicide during COVID, specifically because of the lockdowns. You know, the rates of suicide and overdose shot up by a lot during the lockdowns.
Yeah.
And the government should be accountable for that. And instead, after, yeah, ruining people's lives, making their problems exponentially worse than they already were, they're offering them this way out, death. Yeah. It's sick.
Yeah. Well, I hate to end on that note, but where can people find you?
The best way to find me is probably on Substack. That's www.meganmurphy.ca. I am back on Twitter, or X as we're calling it now. I'm having a hard time getting that through my head, but I'm sure we will eventually, at Megan E. Murphy. And I'm on Instagram at Megan Emily Murphy. And I'm selling Don't Drink the Kool-Aid shirts on Teespring. So if you go to my link tree is linked in my Instagram bio. That's linked there. And I encourage people to not drink the Kool-Aid.
And don't forget that it's Megan with an H.
Yes, Megan with an H, M-E-G-H-A-N.
Correct. Awesome.
Okay.
Well, thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. Thanks a bunch for having me.
Hope to see you in Texas soon.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Shot Callers podcast. Please, if you found value in this content, rate us and share the podcast with a friend. It's a great way to get the message out and to empower everyone to make informed decisions. Until next time, never forget, we are the Shot Callers.